Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear
Rita Plush, creative writing teacher, and fellatio advisor.
That and more. But first, listen, the next Risk Live show is also a Risk Story Slam. On May 16th in New York City at Caveat, we are doing a Risk show where the theme is bad behavior. We'll have three Risk storytellers sharing stories on that theme. And after the intermission, we'll have three audience members share five-minute stories also on the theme bad behavior. And in between the stories in the first half of the show, we're going to guide the audience members to meet one another, to meet a stranger there, like we do in our social events. Folks, we are trying new things. We are experimenting. So if you're in New York on May 16th, come on out. It's going to be very special. And if you are absolutely disgusted, if you think, Jesus God, do I wish that Risk Live shows were like they used to be, then catch a plane to Los Angeles for our May 21st show there, which is going to be, you know, the standard Risk show. And you can get your tickets for either show at risk-show.com/live. Do it, fuck bullet. Oh, I'm sorry I called you guys fuck bullets.
We'll be right back.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Wolfpack behind me now. And we're calling this week's episode Hard Learned Lessons. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Todd Schaefer, but before that, a story from Rita Plush, who you can find at ritaplush.com. That was a sneeze, and here's Rita now with a story we call Continuing Ed.
Hi, how you doing? I'm a writer, by the way, creative writing at Continuing Ed in a community college. I've been doing this maybe 10, 12 years. I'm a teacher and a writer, and I love writing. I have this need to express myself, to tell people who I am, how I've lived, what I believe. And I love hearing other people's stories, too. And I tell my students who are new at writing, be honest about yourself. Make it real, make it from the heart, make it from the gut. New writers often think that they have to have big vocabularies, that it makes them appear smart, but that's not true. The simpler you tell a story, the more real, the more honest you are about yourself, the more vulnerable you show yourself to be, the more you engage people, and they want to know what you're writing about. This one class I'm thinking about happened maybe 4 years ago, just before COVID shut down. It was a really interesting class. We had a very diverse group. There was this old Jamaican woman who made her own soap. She did her own washing and made her own soap out of fat, oil, and lard. No Tide Pods for her. There was also this Jewish guy in his, I guess he was in about his 70s, and his mother lived in Germany during the time of Hitler. And rather than have the Nazis destroy her art collection, confiscate her art collection, really, she destroyed it before they could get their hands on it. But who really stood out in my mind was this young kid. He was about 20 years old, and it was very surprising to me to have this young man in my class because, like I said, it's continuing education, and I get mostly seniors in my class. So this kid walks in, and he's wearing sneakers, he's got sweatpants on, a hoodie, and he walks with kind of a roll to his walk, and his shoulders are thrown back, and I can tell by the way he's walking that this kid has a good opinion of himself. He has confidence, and I like to see that in a young person. So some ways into the term, I give a writing assignment for homework. And the assignment is, write about a disappointment you had. Something you wanted and did not get. Okay, fine. So the next week, the students come in, everybody takes their seats, and I say, volunteers, and right away, this kid's hand goes up, and I'm thinking, well, good. This is a young man. He's in a class full of seniors, adults. He's not shy about it. He's going to tell us a story. So he starts telling his story. And the story is that he's an athlete, and he was in a basketball game. And this is no surprise, because I said, he's wearing the sneakers, the hoodie, the yada yada, he walks in a certain way. And while he's recovering from this accident, his leg is in a cast, by the way, this young girl he knows comes to visit him. So they're sitting and having a chat, and partway into the conversation, he says to her, I'm thirsty. Would you mind getting me a soda from the kitchen? And while you're getting one, get one for yourself. So fine. She comes back, she has the soda, they have a little catch up, they know the same people, they're from the same block, and then he gets right into the accident. And what happened was, he was in the last minutes of this basketball game, and someone from the other team plows into him just about as he's going to make a killer slam dunk shot. That's how he put it, a killer slam dunk shot. And the poor kid leaves the game on a stretcher. He has broken his leg. And he's telling her about how frustrated he feels. He can't get around. He's in a cast. This image of himself as an athlete, as an active man, he doesn't have it anymore. He's used to going to the schoolyard every day, practicing his shots, pounding that ball, layups, jump shots, the whole works. And I'm starting to feel for the kid. And then, in the same casual way, he asked this girl to get him a soda from the kitchen. He says, How about a blowjob? What the? I couldn't believe it. And I looked around the classroom, and nobody could believe it. Their mouths were up, their eyes were popping. He goes on with his story. I had nothing to say. I was like, nothing to say. He goes on with his story. She said no. I said, why? Because I don't want to, she said. And she storms out of the house. You ass. You stupid pig, I thought. This is how you talk to a girl? This is what young men are saying to young women today? How about a soda? Give me a blowjob? This is a special thing for a girl to do for a guy. At least in my day it was. I remember the first time I did that for a guy. Was it in a Buick? A Chevy? I don't remember. Only kidding. But, I mean, I had to do something about this. I couldn't let this just lay there. So I said, volunteers, anybody? Surely somebody has something to say about this interesting essay. Finally, a woman raised her hand. She thought that the trophies lined up on his dresser showed how much he was part of basketball. And I said, well, that's really good. That's good listening, because I always stress in my classes how important details are, how they enrich a story and make it stronger. Anyone else, I said. Everybody looked like they wanted to disappear. Nothing. Nothing but the blowjob in the room that everyone was thinking and everyone was too embarrassed to talk about. But this was my class, and I just couldn't say nothing. I had to address this in some way, and I had to do it in a way where I wouldn't seem like some old fuddy-duddy who didn't know which end is up. I'm on Facebook. I have apps. I download. I know what's going on. But yeah, Facebook, I know. That's for old farts. But I didn't want him to think so. So I said, did you ever ask a girl for a blowjob in that way and get it? I said it. I said blowjob. I don't say blowjob in mixed company. I don't say blowjob in any company. But there I was throwing it out like it was my first words. He said, some girls do. I said to myself, boy, am I out of step. I thought he needed an attitude adjustment. Maybe it was I who needed the attitude adjustment. So I said to him, next time you ask a girl for a blowjob, be more subtle about it. Subtle how, he said. I said, well, don't come on like gangbusters. Hold your hand. Stroke her arm. Ask her what she likes. Ask her what she wants. And I could see the women in the classroom, they were nodding. And the men, they were listening. And he was all ears. And if there's one thing that I pride myself as a teacher, it's holding a student's attention. And I had his attention. Are you giving this dick instructions on how to get a blowjob? Are you out of your mind? My boss walked in on me. I could lose my job. What was this? Continuing ed or sex ed? And then he said, and I could see the wheels turning, I could see a light go on in his head. And he said, like finessing the ball, he said. Finessing the ball. Yeah, my coach always talks about finessing the ball. Developing a strategy, planning your next move, then going in for the kill. Going in for the kill, right? This is what a female is to you, getting a blowjob, getting in for the kill. If I could go back there, oh, if I could go back there, what I'd say to this prick. You entitled prick. What makes you think you deserve such a thing? Show some respect. This is a gift a girl gives to you. What makes you think you deserve such a gift? I'd say that if I could go back there. But it was done, and there was no going back. And then he said to me, in the most polite voice you could imagine, "Thank you. Thank you, Professor. I'll try that next time." And I was so rattled. I was so off my game. I didn't know if I should say, "You're welcome," or put it on my resume. Rita Plush, creative writing teacher and fellatio advisor. Thank you very much.
Let us consider that of the man. Just beneath the penis, which is usually small and relaxed, is the scrotum. This pouch contains two testicles. The testicles manufacture the male sex cells, spermatozoa, or sperm. These sperm cells are produced and stored in a mass of curled tubes. During sexual stimulation, the penis becomes engorged with blood, causing it to become firm and erect. It is only in this state that it can be introduced into the female sex organs, affecting intercourse. Or coitus. Stimulation of the penis causes the muscles of the vas deferens to contract. This propels the sperm toward the urethra. At the same time, the seminal vesicles and prostate gland also contract and add their fluids to the sperm, thus forming semen. The semen, containing on the average about 100 million active sperm, is then ejected from the penis through the urethra. This ejection is known as ejaculation.
We'll be right back.
Calling all pop culture enthusiasts.
Are you obsessed with all things celebrity?
Do you live for the drama, the laughs, and the unexpected moments that unfold on social media?
Then you're going to want to tune in to the Comments by Celebs podcast.
Join us three times a week as we deep dive into every aspect of pop culture.
Whether it's dissecting the latest trends or just chatting about your favorite celebs, Comments by Celebs has you covered.
We have new episodes out every week. Follow and listen to Comments by Celebs on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Risk. This is Starfucker Without Vowels behind me now. The without vowels part isn't part of their name. It's part of the spelling of their name, which lax vowels. And we just heard an ejaculatory interstitial by the very lewd and lurid Hope Brush, which followed Rita Plush's colorful storytelling about hardcore skull fucking. Folks, listen, I joke and I jest, but did you know that I have been studying Ericksonian hypnotherapy for about 2 years now? And separately, I've been taking a very prestigious course in coaching so I can become certified by the International Coaching Federation, the ICF. I have been learning all about how a coach is not a mentor or a therapist. A coach is someone who is specially trained to listen to you in a very particular kind of way, to ask particular kinds of questions, and to facilitate a focused deep dive where you think and feel things through for yourself. A coach doesn't need to work in your field or have a similar background as you or anything like that. A coach is trained to hold space for you to explore your options and reevaluate your circumstances, to zero in on the way you do you. And since I've been coaching people to share their stories for so long, I thought, man, I think I'd be good at ICF-style coaching too. And it turns out I am. But there's more. I bring something unique to the mix because I've also studied hypnotherapy for quite a while now, like I said. So I'm starting to add a hypnotic guided meditation to the end of each of my coaching sessions. So for about 50 minutes, myself and a client will do an ICF style coaching session, then take a 5-minute break. Then for about 20 minutes, we'll do a relaxing meditation, a chance to close your eyes and lay back a little and allow the sleepier, dreamier part of you to have a little break. And I'll guide you then to make space for your subconscious mind to bring all of its resources to your intentions. And at the end of the session, I'll give you an audio recording of the meditation so you can lie down and listen to it again and again if you like. Now, here's the deal. Once I'm certified, which won't be for another year or so, I'm going to be charging standard coaching and hypnosis rates. It's not cheap. But before then, I'm offering a super cheap bargain rate while I add up my hours for certification. It's a lot like how my mom used to take me and my siblings to the local beauty school to get super cheap haircuts from the students in training. So I'm offering 80-minute sessions for $80 each. So if you're feeling stuck or confused, dissatisfied, or just needing some new inspiration in any area of your life, consider partnering with me in this way. Give it a shot and get a coaching session with me. Just shoot me an email at kevin@risk-show.com. Now, next up, we're going to hear from Todd Schaefer. Todd has been participating in storytelling and comedy events in Pittsburgh for years. This is his second time on Risk. He's been on the Moth Radio Hour and Tales with Friends. And here he is now with a story we call The Mullets.
When the bars closed at 2 a.m., I opted to go with my friends to a bar in the next town that closed at 4 a.m. because I was in college and I was majoring in bad decisions. I could have walked home at 2 a.m., but there had been a blizzard that morning, and temperatures plummeted, It was freezing and snowy and icy out, and I couldn't make myself do it. But when we got to the bar that closed at 4, I had no desire to drink anymore or be there or even be awake. And it was pretty obvious my friends were going to be there for the long haul. So I started working on an exit strategy, and I worked closely with what I had on hand, which was all the alcohol I'd consumed. And I came up with what I thought was a foolproof plan, and that was to get us thrown out of the bar. And that's more or less what majoring in bad decisions looks like. So we're finishing a pitcher, and I lean back in my chair and I say, "Hey, what do you say we get the hell out of here?" And I smash my glass on the floor under the table. That was my entire plan. Smash my glass and hope we get thrown out. My friends look momentarily stunned, but then they decide this is hilarious. So they lean back and they smash their glasses on the floor under the table. The bartender is clearly pissed. So I'm thinking, mission accomplished. Then one of my buddies gets up, walks to the bar, orders another pitcher. The bartender hesitates, serves him, but gives him plastic cups. Safety first. My plan utterly failed, so I figure I'm stuck. I'm there till closing. We're there for a while, probably a couple more pitchers. And then I see two guys heading across the bar, and they look like students, and they also look like they're leaving. So I ask them if they're going back to campus, and if so, could I have a ride? And the answer is yes and yes. So I say goodbye to my buddies and walk outside with my new friends into the just this brittle cold where everything crunches and sparkles, and we walk to their car, which is a new Toyota, extremely nice car for a college kid. Now, I'm 6'5", they're both shorter guys, but I'm the hitchhiker, so I fold myself into the tiny back seat. We're sitting there for a minute, we're shivering, the car's running. Both guys are named Steve. Steve 1's driving, Steve 2 is the co-pilot. While we're talking, the car's warming up, 5 locals come out of the bar. We knew they were locals. The first clue was they're full-on mullets. They had the rest of the uniform, too, with jean jackets and cowboy boots and big belt buckles. They beeline straight to our car. They fan out, and they are yelling at us, pointing, going, "You assholes and motherfuckers!" That was more or less what they were trying to get across. So I go, "Why don't we just get out of here?" And Steve 1 kicks it into reverse, and we take off. So we're driving back toward campus, and I asked Steve's, "Did you guys have any interaction with those guys from the bar?" And before they can answer, bam, there's this crunching metal, shattering plastic. Our car shoots forward. My head slams into the back window, and we fishtail across the road. I swivel around, look out the back window, straight into the eyes of the furious mullets who had just rammed our car with their car. And their faces are lit up horror movie style by our smashed taillights. And we are now in a we-can-die-at-any-second car chase. And the Steves are completely panicked. They're screaming like little girls in the front seat. And I've never been in a situation like this before, but luckily, I'm not panicked. And I figure somebody's got to, step up and make it less likely that we'll die. And it really didn't look like the Steves were going to do that. So I go into what I now think of as border collie mode, and I go, "Get onto campus, drive to the police station." Steve 1 goes, "I don't know where the police station is." I go, "I'll direct you." And then the mullets floor it, bam, smash into us again, and I can see bits of both cars fly across the road. Now we're rocketing onto campus. The roads are snowy and icy. The carload of bloodthirsty mullets is hot on our tail, and I tell Steve 1 that we have to make the next left. And when he slows down just a tiny bit, the mullets hit us again. Both cars lose control and spin on the ice through this big four-way intersection. We're headed straight for a light pole. I throw my arms up to protect my head. Both cars plow into the huge snowbanks on the far side. Back end in for us, front end in for them. The light pole is up against the side of our car. We are stunned that we're still intact. And we all each yell, "Fuck!" Steve 1 stomps on the gas, and miraculously, we pop out of the snowdrift. The mullets aren't quite so lucky, so we've got a tiny bit of a lead. But apparently, I'm not the only one majoring in bad decisions, because Steve 1 decides this is the perfect time to abandon our get to the police station strategy. He whips into this little dead-end parking lot, and I yell, "No!" But he noses it into this parking space, shuts off the car and the lights, and somehow thinks that we're invisible And a few seconds later, the mullets pull in right behind us. Now we're trapped. The mullets are piling out of their car. And Steve One goes, I'm going to get out and talk to them. And I can only see this ending in our deaths. And I say, the fuck you are, lock your doors. Which they both do just as the mullets get there. So now the mullets are screaming. They're kicking at the doors. They're pounding at the windows and on the hood and the roof. And Steve Two rolls his window down like an inch. And he goes, what do you guys want? The guy outside the window steps back. And he goes, we want to fucking kill you. Then he grabs the top of the window in that little gap and he starts rocking it back and forth, trying to snap it off. And I yell, roll the window up, smash his fingers, start the car, put it in reverse and ram their car. The fingers immediately disappear from the window. Steve 2 rolls it up. I have no idea why the mullets thought it was okay to smash up the front of their car by repeatedly ramming us, but the idea of us backing into their car was clearly a problem because one of them ran back and moved the car. So we shoot out of the parking space and the chase is on again. But it takes them a few seconds to get back in the car because there's five of them and they're drunk. So we have enough of a lead that we get to the police station, even though they chase us all the way there. So we pull into the police lot. They come to a stop in front of the station for just a second and then floor it and take off. During the chase, I wrote down their license number, assuming the police would find it on our bodies when all this was over. So I'm thinking, now we're safe. The cops can catch these fuckers and seconds count. And I'm still wedged into this tiny back seat. So I hand the license number to Steve One, and I say, run in there. If they call this out right away, maybe they can catch him. So the Steves sprint into the station. I unfold myself out of the back seat, get out of the car and stand up and realize everything hurts. There's a knot on the back of my head from where it hit the window. Every muscle in my body feels wrung out like I've just had electroshock. But I figure they have it under control. So I take a minute and I look at the car. And a few minutes ago, this was a shiny new Toyota. And now there isn't a square inch that hasn't been kicked in or dented or smashed. And it hits me that it's a miracle we're not dead. So I turn to go into the police station and I start feeling pretty good. I'm picturing they'll all be huddled around the desk. A cop will have the radio mic in his hand. And just as I walk in, he'll be saying, we got him. But when I walk in, the Steves are sitting on this bench over by the front door, looking like little kids who are in trouble. And there's a policewoman at the front desk, and she's got this tight green uniform on, and her hair's severely pulled back, and she is just glaring at the three of us with disgust. And I go, what's going on? And Steve One goes, she won't talk to us. She told us we had to sit here and calm down. And apparently, they'd run into the station. They were loud. They were panicked and hysterical, which, you know, you'd think be a sign that they clearly needed help. A woman at the desk decided that before they, you know, they deserved any help from the police, that they really had to calm the fuck down. So I go, give me the license number. And I walk up to the desk and I'm trying to be so, I'm talking to the police, polite. And I go, ma'am, a car full of guys just tried to kill us. This is their license number. If you call it out, you could catch them. And she won't take the number. And she whips at me and snaps, I told them, and I'm telling you, sit down and shut up. Now, she wasn't doing anything else at this time. No police work that would keep her from helping us. And I try a couple more times to get her to do anything at all. But all she'll do is angrily talk over me and then yell at me to sit down and shut up. So we're there for about a half an hour. And by now, I figure the mullets are back at the bar for last call, and I just give up. And I stand up and I glare at the policewoman and say, the police clearly aren't going to help us. Then I turn to Steve One, give him my contact information, and say, hey, if your insurance company needs a statement, have them call me. And then I make that long, frigid walk home that I've been trying to avoid for the last few hours. For years, I wondered what the Steves could have done to set the mullets off like that. They hit on the wrong girl, make fun of that now iconic hairstyle or their silly jean jackets. And then, when I was working on this story, I realized that I am more clueless than I ever thought possible, and that I actually have a serious case of self-blame blindness, which is not a real condition because I made it up. But the main symptom is failure to see your own glaring stupidity. And obviously, I had that bad. Because of course it was me. I single-handedly turned the mullets from drunken, resentful locals into drunken, resentful, murderous locals. When I smashed my glass on the floor, I was trying to send a message to the bartender that we were just asshole college kids who needed to be thrown out of the bar. Bartender didn't get that message. But the message the mullets got was that we were asshole college kids who had just defiled their drinking temple, and therefore we deserved a good beatdown. They saw me sitting with two guys, and they saw me leave with two guys. And it was on. I wish I could apologize, but there's an awful lot of Steves out there, and I don't know which ones to apologize to. If by some miracle, either of the Steves that I dragged into that near-death vortex on that frigid night are listening to this, I am truly so sorry. I can't apologize enough. You were just trying to do a good deed. I was just trying to go home. And because of me, the mullets were just trying to kill us.
Mississippi mud flat, that denim downhill or Tennessee top hat, Missouri compromise, I got that shorty long back. It can be smaller or bigger, I ain't a stickler. It ranges from mini mullets to Florida Georgia spine ticklers. I always let it dangle, no I don't let it tangle. So baby if you're single, come and get a better angle. If you're sexy and you know it, run your fingers through it, pull it. Yeah you know you can't control it, shake that ass and shake that mullet. If you're sexy and you know it, run your fingers through it, pull it.
This is Risk. This is Jay Powell behind me now, and we just heard from Todd Schaefer, who said he hopes that the guys who gave him that ride hear this and can say to their kids, you know that story I've been telling you all these years? Here's the asshole that caused the whole thing. Folks, one of our Patreon patrons, Abby Heitzler, sent us this note with their donation. Abby said, I wish I had the means to single-handedly push you through. I started listening to Risk in the eighth grade. I'm sure glad it brought me such open-mindedness so early on. Sending love and luck. Thank you so much, Abby. Getting messages like that is so encouraging to us. And you know, whether we make it through another year will depend on more Risk listeners becoming Patreon members and more Patreon members raising their donations. However, even if you're not a Patreon member, go to patreon.com/risk to hear my latest 20-minute check-in about four amazing new ways we're expanding our mission to help people connect in meaningful ways. It's such an exciting and inspiring check-in, and I hope a lot of you email me with your observations and ideas based on it. In order to save the show, we're changing how we do live shows, how we make the podcast, how we do social events, and even how we're planning a story-worthy vacation adventure in Portugal for our fans. So go to patreon.com/risk to listen to all this big news. The check-in is called Four Amazing Ways We're Switching Things Up. And then email me at kevin@risk-show.com to let me know what you think.
We'll be right back. We're back.
Folks, on Thursday, we have the best of Mother's Day stories. I think that's number two, right? Is that number two? You're just gonna have to click it and listen. You're just gonna have to click it and listen, folks. But that's Thursday. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Hard-learned lesson it was.